Welcome to the MPM Interconnections Podcast. I'm your host, Jillian Ward, and with me today is Michael Rucker, the founder and CEO of Scout Clean Energy. Michael is an industry veteran and is with us today to talk about the ISO migration out west. So, Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jillian. It's really nice to be back onto your podcast. I'm excited to have this discussion today.
To start off, the West has not had a regional market really to speak of, except for CAISO in California. And so what is the history out West, and why has the West found itself in this situation?
Wow. If I look back 20 years ago, I would have never foreseen us being where we are right now, or at least not having got to where I hope we would be by now. Still, it's really promising just in terms of recent changes we've seen. But, you know, really the story goes all the way back to FERC Order 888 back in 1996, when open access to transmission was established. And that kind of followed the National Energy Policy Act in 92. These were the things that actually got me into the industry when it really started to deregulate and we had open access to the transmission network. And then, FERC Order 2000 was a huge driver just in terms of establishing the RTO concepts and RTOs in the U.S. And then, you know, there was a chairman of the FERC at the time, Pat Wood, who was really instrumental in trying to drive the utilities around the country into ISOs. And it largely was working. And it was a really exciting time for me because the ISOs enabled markets for us to interconnect our projects, trade energy, just generally facilitate, the energy transition, which was in its earliest days there. But, you know, I remember really clearly having lived through the California energy crisis, things kind of came to a stop at that point after it. And it depends on your interpretation, but the way I remember it, having lived through it, was fears about wider deregulation and consolidation RTOs kind of helped to just quash the idea of having a true Western ISO outside of the Cal ISO at that time. And, you know, we lost our momentum at that point. And it's only been relatively recently that utilities and other market participants have been driving towards an RTO ISO in the West. And what I think is really exciting about this iteration is all the stakeholders seem aligned to do it. You know, way back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the utilities were kind of being pushed into it, didn't really want to see it. They liked their monopolies and their own, balancing authorities. But now with intermittent generation becoming so prevalent across the Western grid, the utilities themselves want that flexibility to help to schedule, manage, and broaden the footprint of the transmission network in the West. So we have more momentum right now to actually come to a regional ISO than I've seen for 20 years. And I've literally been waiting for those 20 years for this to happen. So I'm pretty excited.
One follow-up question about the energy crisis in California. What was it about that crisis that kind of quashed the efforts for a Western RTO?
Well, you know, the Cal ISO at that time in its earlier days, plus the Cal PX, which is long defunct. I mean, it just didn't work, clearly. And, you know, led to blackouts in the state when they really should have had the capacity to kind of muddle through that. And it was also a time that encouraged, through the Cal PX, very short-term contracting for energy. So it created huge volatility. And of course, as we all know, you know, from the Enron fiasco, the opportunity to game that system. So people were worried that we were going to kind of take that model and spread it around the United States. Didn't really turn out to be the case. It was a learning event for everyone. And the other ISOs, as they grew out, including ERCOT, PJM, for example, NEPOOL, New York ISO, they learned from that. And we've managed that well, but it did put the brakes on expansion in the West for the time being. And that's kind of where we've been for a long time now.
Long time. What year was the energy crisis out in California?
Oh, I remember it. You have to go back and really look at the details, but I remember it kind of around 2001, kind of resolving around 2002. And that's when things really started to slow down, definitely. I mean, in 2003, I think FERC tried to really mandate RTOs national. Before it was more of a carrot approach, but that pretty much got shot down. There was a lot of political opposition to it at the time. And I think that really came out of the debacle in California for the most part.
Wow. And like you said, you've seen a lot of this play out during your career. So as a developer, how is it different working out west versus other parts of the United States?
Yeah, it's a very different environment. It's very fragmented, right? So you have literally hundreds of balancing authorities spread throughout the whole region. There's a lot of focus on transmission. The whole transmission networks in the West have a different design than what we've seen in the more densely parts of the country in the Midwest and East. There just aren't many people out there, not many load centers. So you basically have a system that's designed to connect remote generation to large load centers and some interconnections between, for the most part, independent balancing authorities controlled by utilities. So it's a real hodgepodge and framework. So developing in the West from a transmission perspective creates really unique transmission challenges in particular, trying to get transmission service, for example, to be able to deliver your capacity, crossing seams constantly in terms of trying to schedule wheeling charges between utilities to reimburse them for access to the transmission. These are things that we don't have to deal with in the ISOs and the type pools, which is why those markets have been so liquid, which is why those markets have seen so much growth in renewable generation in particular. It's just a lot harder in the West. And the West itself, the geography also adds for other development challenges that you don't see in a lot of the country. Although we have a huge land area to work with, a lot of that is federally owned. It's public land, which until relatively recently has been very, very difficult for us to develop on. I mean, we've seen a lot of cooperation from federal agencies in the last few years, and I expect that to continue. But still, there are challenges. This isn't tilled land for the most part. This is a lot of wild land or not very, densely exploited in the sense that you might be grazing land, for example, or used for forestry or so on. Not tilled farmland that you would see in the Midwest in particular. So you have lots of species and environmental issues that just really don't appear on projects in a lot of the country. So we deal with that from time to time, actually most of our projects at some level. And that also makes it more challenging for siting ultimately. And you combine those environmental challenges with federal permitting processes, and that's kind of a very complicated stew of issues that you have to sort out before you can enjoy your meal, which would be your completed development project.
It really is the Wild West then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. But it has lots of potential. This is the fast growing. A lot of these are the fast growing markets in the country. We have to find ways to serve their needs. So we don't have a lot of the infrastructure that has been built up over time in other parts of the country. So we have to very intensely invest in that over the years, the next few years to, really make a really deep and functional market in the West.
And with the efforts to create a regional market underway, some of the examples of these potential RTOs, ISOs out West are CAISOs, Markets Plus, and SPPs, Western Extension. And so are we going to see continued growth of already established markets, or are we going to see a new Western RTO?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And, I'm a developer. I'm even though you've been nice enough to invite me to your podcast, I'm not really a transmission expert, ultimately. There's so much work going on, so many different organizations and experts looking at this across the West. I'm just trying to build projects and find people to buy the power. So it's interesting to me to see, it's almost a competition between ISOs in terms of who gets which market. So you got the Cal ISO, WEIM, and you have the SPP WEIS, and each of them has a day ahead and imbalance. Those are imbalance markets, but they also have day ahead markets. Plus, there are resource adequacy programs like the WRAP that goes over the whole Western region. And they almost seem to be competing on who gets their market to expand. And then you have the utilities themselves who are looking at which market they want to participate in. I think they all want to be part of a broader market, but can they go to Cal ISO? Well, there are big governance issues associated with Cal ISO. It's a California institution. They're afraid that their interests aren't going to be looked out for it. You look at SPP, and again, SPP isn't necessarily interconnected with the largest load centers that we have in the West, too, which ultimately are the the customers we need to serve. So it's really interesting. It's consolidating, but it's still doing it in a somewhat fragmented manner. I would prefer to see just a West-wide RTO, frankly. The bigger the pool, the more ability we have to schedule across large distances, to settle projects financially, better for developers. And I think it enhances our ability to interconnect more resources and faster. But the West is probably going to be still fragmented in a sense, consolidated maybe in two major zones if the SPP and Cal ISO more, models kind of continue. The chances of seeing a West-wide regional RTO seem pretty remote right now in the near term, I would say.
Wow. And some states have deadlines for utilities to join an RTO or an ISO. Some of these states include Colorado and Nevada. And so can you tell me about how this might impact developers and projects?
Well, on the broad scale, I'm a big fan. Anything we can do to push the markets into ISOs, the better. And sometimes, you need to kickstart that. And the legislation we've seen in Colorado and Nevada is a way to do that. I think the utilities, like I mentioned before, are naturally moving in that direction for very practical reasons. But, having a deadline out there may help us conclude what otherwise would be a process that would go longer. For us, though, any kind of transition between markets as a developer creates uncertainties for us. So you're basically, in particular, things like interconnecting projects, the whole interconnection regime is going to be changing, right? So how will you manage that at a practical level for projects that have been in an interconnection process for several years now? Will they be grandfathered and complete the process that we've been planning for? Or will we be thrown into a new process, potentially adding costs or delays or uncertainties? That's challenging for us, certainly, to kind of manage with that. But I think the overall benefits are going to be really just outweigh any kind of short-term issues we have. But, putting new layers of markets, the day ahead and the real-time markets, and we can talk, I think we will probably talk later maybe a little bit about that. But, right now, settlements for projects are pretty much bilateral with utilities and off-takers based on physical transactions, right? So we're not exposed to some of the risks we see in ISOs. Not everything is perfect in the ISO. A lot of that is basis risk, for example, and nodal pricing. Transmission congestion is priced in ISO markets. And, is my project that I interconnected, let's say, in rural New Mexico, when it becomes part of SPP Plus or another ISO system, what's my nodal price going to be then? Who knows? So that creates uncertainties too on the market end that kind of compound the interconnection end. But, it's all worth it to have a wider, broader market in the long run. So we're going to muddle through it. And I'm sure when we as a industry organize these things, we'll find ways to mitigate that and transition that, hopefully, that's efficient.
Excellent. And we kind of talked about the transmission, the potential transmission needs, but with the rise of ISO or RTOs out west or the expansion of markets, are we going to need more transmission to allow for the trade of energy?
Absolutely. I mean, one way or the other, we need it, whether or not we have ISO. I like to think that when we move to ISOs, which will have probably more integrated comprehensive planning regionally within those ISOs than what we currently see. And I could go through a long list of institutions that manage that in the WSPP and WEC now, and they do a great job, but they are working with a very fragmented market, right? So I would hope that an ISO planning process would make us better at planning for our long lead transmission and also integration across seams and over a wider distance. But does the West need more transmission? Absolutely. The energy transition is going to demand it. We need more transmission infrastructure for bulk power transfers, everything down to, distributed generation and distribution assets in the town of Boulder, where I'm sitting right now. So yes, we need a lot of investment, a lot of transmission. We need to find a way to plan for that. This is probably a topic for another podcast, is we need to find a way to permit that and get it built quickly. So I think an ISO can actually help. I would say too that ISOs, though, that we've seen so far have been notoriously not very good at planning beyond their seams, right? So again, when we have a network in the West where we have multiple ISOs, there probably will still continue to be issues trying to plan long distance transmission in particular that crosses those seams.
You mentioned the permitting struggles of doing big projects like that. Can you delve into it just a little bit? I know local permitting versus state permitting and federal permitting, that is a hurdle for a lot of projects. How might that be streamlined to help projects out west?
Well, you know, I don't know if that's really a topic per se for the ISOs. That's more a question for, when it gets down to it, probably the federal government and state governments in terms of how they manage their permitting authority. I think, like I mentioned, the federal government has become much more flexible, probably driven a lot by goals to allow the energy transition to continue to move forward. That's made it streamlined the process somewhat, but it's still very long. You look at like interstate transmission projects like Transwest, or maybe a better example, SunZia, you know, Pattern Energy has been, and their predecessors have been working on that for most of my career. So, you know, probably upwards of 20 years. So without even getting the details of what it takes to permit a process, just the fact it took them 20 years to get that done just indicates how hard it really is.
Yeah, good point. So looking at the Western region as a whole, what is the easiest part of the West to work in right now for Scout? And what part is Scout kind of keeping an eye on for the next hotspot for projects?
Wow, that's a really difficult question to answer because, like I said, there's so many different markets, so many different perturbations of it. You know, in a lot of ways, Cal ISO is the easiest market to work in. Like, it is part of an ISO. We have relatively well and understood interconnection process, certainly. We have day-ahead markets, real-time markets that allow us to sign virtual power agreement, purchase agreements, work with commercial and, you know, CCA aggregators, for example, to do projects, things that we really don't have access to in the rest of the West. But the California transmission queues are so oversubscribed at this point that a new interconnection going in is going to happen certainly in the next decade, and, you know, maybe mid-decade to later. So it's suffered from that success in the sense that it governs the largest market in the West in terms of demand, but also is a relatively easy place from an ISO perspective to work. I won't get into permitting in California so much. So the rest of the West offers this excitement of maybe not having transmission queues that are so oversubscribed, particularly when you look at it from utility by utility, although the larger ones, like a Pacific Corp, for example, are starting to look like the ISOs themselves in terms of how much interest there is. But still, the other issues associated with not being part of an ISO become prevalent, right? You need to get transmission service. You have to deal potentially with pancake wheels that add cost to deliver your energy across those utilities. So sometimes the illusion that interconnections go faster in the WECC is kind of tripped up by the details that it's very hard to get your energy to market, and it's very, very hard to find buyers. I mean, oftentimes you're really limited to a handful, or in many cases, even a sole buyer for your energy. Where in an ISO, we practically could have hundreds, including corporate investors too. So, you know, we're really excited about working in the WECC just because we see the potential of growth, and we're actually pretty well distributed through the whole region. You probably are familiar with our, as an example, our Horse Heaven project in the Pacific Northwest, which is, you know, over a gigawatt in scale. But it's a struggle. I mean, it's a real challenge to get projects like that, not only through permitting processes, but also manage the physical transmission issues that we just wouldn't be seeing in an ISO. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but overall, you know, we're very excited to work in that WECC.
And so you sort of answered part of this question, but have there been benefits from not having an ISO or an RTO out West so far?
Well, the benefits are probably because there are fewer buyers. There's less competition in all of these markets. They're not as oversubscribed, like I said, in some areas. It's just much more challenging to kind of get your project's power to market. So that would be an advantage. Some of these areas haven't been as intensely developed for renewable energy as you see in others. I mean, California itself, for example, is a good example, extremely densely developed solar markets to the extent that we see negative pricing because it is an ISO, and that's how you govern transmission or congestion on the system. See a lot of negative pricing events. In most of the WECC, if you're not part of an ISO, you're not seeing concentrated intermittent renewables, particularly solar and wind in the off-peak hours, as you are seeing in some of the ISOs. So those are the advantages. Disadvantages, like I mentioned before, hard to get transmission service, pancake wheel issues, and a limited number of buyers, and typically, a different profile for the buyers than you see in ISOs often. Very often, utilities, for example.
You kind of also touched on this, but how will things change once Western market is established, or more of these, the CAISO and the SPP expand further into the West?
Well, what made those markets so attractive for us, not only just ease to interconnect, which has now created a backlog of projects, really the existence of real-time and day-ahead energy markets. So that allows you to manage and contract for financial transactions as opposed to solely physical transactions. So the corporate VPPA is really completely built on that model. It really requires those day-ahead and real-time markets in order to settle correctly and to price correctly. So when those are introduced west-wide, as they have been in California for a long time now, we'll see the ability to expand the number of off-takers who can participate in the market. And that'll be a revolutionary change in the West, definitely. So that I'm really looking forward to, ultimately. Because right now, corporate buyers are the largest single class of off-takers for renewable energy in the country. And that doesn't show any chance of changing anytime soon. And we're going to see continued growth there. And it's outpacing growth from other off-take profiles. So any way we can facilitate that is good for the market overall, and particularly good for installations of renewables.
Excellent. Thank you. Michael, those were my questions for you. Is there anything you'd like to add about ISOs moving out west?
Well, let's bring them on. I mean, I'm so excited to see it happen. I should put a bottle of champagne away. I should have done it 20 years ago, that I can crack open the day that it actually happens. But I'll be celebrating, definitely.
That'll be a good day. Michael, thank you for taking the time to join us for our podcast. It's been great having you on.
Yeah, thank you, Jillian. Take care.